Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 163, recorded Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. The Roundtable is back to look at all the action in the SEC, looking at big wins by Alabama, LSU, and Georgia, just to name a few. The Roundtable will also look ahead to this week's matchups at UT at Alabama, Auburn at Arkansas, and A&M at Ole Miss. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, taking a look at what happens inside the SEC. We kind of look back, we kind of look forward, we kind of look way back, we kind of look way forward. That's just the way we go here with SEC Sports Roundtable, but we do it from the fan side. We all have allegiances, and we're not afraid to tell you who we root for and why we root for them and why we're right and all the other co-hosts are wrong. So without any other delays, I want to welcome some of my guests today. Blair Smiley. Blair, welcome.
It's good to be back, Shane.
Yeah, nice of you to make a flight back into Nashville so you can join us this week, so we appreciate that. And then Nick Jones from Bama Hammer. Nick, welcome aboard.
It's good to be here, Shane. And, you know, last week was a great week to skip doing a podcast because nothing happened, right? I mean, we didn't miss anything last week. So
No, nothing at all. And for those that are new to the podcast, I'm not going to sit here and go through a big long to-do about things. But, you know, we're switching things up. And me and Nick kind of ran a test on this, our last podcast, and we're going to continue it. So those lifelong fans that have been with us for the past 4+ years or so listening to this podcast, we're not going to break down every single game and look at every single game that's coming up. We're just going to kind of go free form here and talk about last week's games and performances, the SEC overall, and then how that's going to impact and affect what this week looks like as far as the slate of games. And so we'll get into some of those things, but we're not going to get deep into the woods about each individual game and try to break them all down. We just don't have the bandwidth or the time, and I could imagine you guys don't want to listen to a 2.5-hour podcast anymore either. So we're going to kind of throw it out, and you know, I'm going to kick things off talking about the first game that happened last week. And, you know, my Kentucky Wildcats are I can't explain how disappointed and upset I am. One of our listeners commented about Auburn getting all this hype now after they have a victory in the SEC, and all of a sudden he was saying folks at ESPN were talking about how Auburn's back and they've arrived, and you know, I went on to talk to him about that, and it's like, do we not understand, for those that don't follow Kentucky, that they're basically a couple of plays away from being number one and undefeated right now in not only the SEC, in the East and overall. The first series against Florida, there's a ball that goes through Baker's hands. I mean, hits him. You can't get any better, and he drops it. So Patrick Toles turns around, throws an interception. Auburn or Florida scores on that. That's a 14-point differential on a game that ended up 14-9. And then you look at the Kentucky game against Auburn, and I can think of three drop passes that I know one of them cost Kentucky a touchdown right there. And it was early in the game. So you're not only talking about there's a lead, but there's also a momentum shift that possibly could have happened on there. So Kentucky was just a couple of scores, a couple of plays away from being undefeated. And for Auburn to come in and get this victory against them and for them to be back, it's just like it blows me away. It just, as a Kentucky fan, it's the same. For as better as Kentucky has been, and how much better they are over last year, yes, they are better. But when you can't finish and you can't catch balls, no matter how, I mean, and these are great players. I don't want to take anything away from Juice or Baker or even Boom Williams. Those are three folks from last Thursday's game that all had drops that were not like a hard catch that they should have, you know, there was a chance they could have caught the ball. Instead, it was a they shouldn't have dropped the ball. You're looking at a Kentucky program that for all the good that it's doing, it's still finding ways to lose these games that they should be not be losing. And all of a sudden, you're going to be nearer towards the bottom of the SEC again when you have no reason to. And all the hype that Florida's getting right now, and all this hype that Auburn's now gotten, if you looked at the ball game, it's not deserved on either one of their programs, and Kentucky's got its own issues to have to deal with. So that's where I am with the first game. I know, Blair, you probably watched some of that game.
Yeah, actually, I didn't really get to watch any of it. I was flying to Tampa that night, but did get to see some highlights of it. And really, Shane, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, Kentucky goes as Patrick Toles goes. You know, he plays really, really well. He's really streaky. He's still inconsistent. But that's really indicative of the SEC. What you just talked about is we can go to a lot of the games, and it's two or three plays. You know, it's two or three plays in Mississippi State, Texas A&M, and that's a different ball game. It's two or three plays. You know, from Alabama, Ole Miss. I mean, you know, Ole Miss turns the ball over. I mean, Alabama turns the ball over four times inside the 30-yard line against Ole Miss, and Ole Miss scores 24 points. They score three touchdowns and a field goal. The normal Alabama defense comes up with a stop in one of those four. You know, so it's. And I think it's what is indicative of the SEC that we're figuring out. LSU, they've got some flaws. You know, they're undefeated, but they're not, you know, if you have to make Brandon Harris, he actually looked great the last game, but we haven't really seen him do it over multiple games. There's just not a big margin between everybody. I mean, that second and third team to that eighth and ninth team in the SEC, which I think Kentucky falls in, there's not a lot of difference. Yeah. And it's just whoever plays well.
I know that you think that how Patrick Toles goes, so does Kentucky, but he was almost 62%, 359 yards and one interception.
Yeah,
a pretty good game. I mean, aside from, you know, it would be even higher if it wasn't for the drops that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, and then you got, you know, the other thing you had, you got Auburn. You know, it's one of those things. We're going into the game, Kentucky, it's a game that if they want to be relevant, they've got to go win. It's also a game that Gus Malzahn goes into, and if he can't go to Kentucky and win, then they don't really have a shot to do anything the rest of the year. This was like this was their game to figure things out. You know, and defensively, Kentucky gives up 255 yards passing to Sean White. You know, it's like Patrick Toles plays well and the defense gives up a little bit more than they normally do, and then you lose a 30-27 ball game. It's frustrating, dude.
And to me, you know, looking at it from afar, watching some Auburn games, I would say if you haven't watched many Auburn games, it should be even more frustrating for a Kentucky fan because, I mean, it's not – I don't know. It's really weird to say that this was Auburn's best game schematically, especially on offense, but I really felt that the balance was there for the first time this season. I think Sean White played within his abilities, completed some passes. You know, Ricardo Lewis had a game to remember, probably his best game overall as an Auburn player, but I really thought that they were, especially when Jeremy Johnson was having his issues, they were relying way too much on the pass because, as we've talked about before, you know, Auburn was a run-first team no matter what you think. You know, a lot of people confused that Auburn runs the spread, they go fast, but last year especially, you know, we saw how dangerous they could be with Cameron Artis Payne. But, you know, there were times that I was sitting there on a Thursday night watching the game with my dad, and I looked at him and I said, you know, Patrick Toles, at his best, is the best quarterback in the SEC. And, I mean, especially after Saturday and seeing how, you know, Allen for Texas A&M really didn't have a great game. I mean, some of that was the Alabama defense. But, and you know, that's not a knock on Toles because the quarterback class is down, but it has to be frustrating. I can't even imagine for a Kentucky fan because there's so much talent. They've recruited so well. And to see a game like that, which is really a statement game, a game that Kentucky, you know, kind of had to have to ensure that, you know, still stay in the SEC East race. It's no, you know, it's not over at all, but that's a game that they should have won. And, you know, even down to the end, if you catch that last pass and don't get sacked, if you're Patrick Toles, you know, you're still in the game and you could have won.
It's so, so frustrating. I mean, and it's kind of like the Chicago Cubs, you know, another one of my teams. And we were talking about, you know, what they're doing tonight, what they are not doing tonight. And it's somewhat similar in that, you know, this team, if we looked at the Kentucky game, you know, none of us at the beginning of this season would have picked Kentucky to beat Auburn. But to sit here and know where we were before kickoff, to know that realistically Kentucky had just as good a shot as anybody to beat Auburn, and the way Kentucky played, they really had an opportunity to beat Auburn and be victorious. That's what's disheartening. It's just like from the Cubs fans, you know, to be one of the best teams since the All-Star break, have the best pitcher, have best pitching performance ever since the All-Star break, and him come out and do what he's done the last couple games in the postseason, and for the Cubs to do what they, it's just, these are the teams I pick and I live and die with, and it's just, it's so frustrating. But, you know, hey, there's other football and there's other teams.
Basketball season's coming soon.
Basketball season, hey, we let one get away from us in basketball season. We're not going there.
But I think you also got to take into consideration, Shane, that, you know, this is what, Stoops' third year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are the things in year two, three, and four where you're building depth. You got to figure out how to win a ball game when you are traditionally a 10th to 14th team in the league and is trying to jump up into that 5th to 8th team in the league type of scenario where you kind of got to figure it out. And what you hope is that they keep plugging along, that they can get bowl eligible, that they can keep just building those steps. It's frustrating because you have those opportunities right there in front of you. You know, and it's always the teams that, you know, it's the Georgias and the Auburn that, you know, always seem to win that close game when some of the other programs don't seem to be able to take advantage of it. And so that's the frustrating part, because you had the opportunity to really, you know, carry some momentum into this week.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, this is going to be a tough game against your Bulldogs this week down in Starkville. And you look at the way things set up, you know, we talk about how the East is down. Well, it's not going to stay down forever. Yeah. So, you know, this was a prime opportunity for Kentucky to be able to come in and basically steal one as far as that goes, if they could have took care of business in these two games, because there are losses still left in their schedule in the SEC. Tennessee is not going to be an easy game. This Saturday with Mississippi State's not going to be an easy game. So, you know, you've got all those things that kind of lined up in Kentucky's favor. You've got Georgia, who's not what we thought they were going to be again, and they've lost Chubb and still, you know, when they get that one injury, they're just not the same program. And so you've got Georgia that's now down a little bit. So the stars lined up for Kentucky this year more than they've ever lined up that I can ever remember. And so that's when you look at it that way, it just becomes even more frustrating that these things have played out the way they have. But you know, at least we didn't get beat by Memphis.
Nice segue.
Thank you. You like that? Was professional right there. I mean, you do these for 4 years, you might actually have something professional happen every once in a while. But you know,
I'll tell you what, Memphis got a good ball club.
They really do. And we've said that. We said that months ago that, yeah, Memphis was the real deal.
But I tell you what, guys, I mean, I don't know if y'all watched that, and I kind of watched it on and off because it was the same time as the state game and I was on vacation, but you know, 14-0, you know, the inability to run the short, you know, have a short running game and bringing in Kim Dichi. And I know everybody's kind of played that up, but, you know, you got third and one and you can't get it. And then you get him knocked out of the game and that's bad. And then it's fourth and one instead of going up 17 to nothing with an easy field goal. You know, on that, and kind of keep the pressure on them, you decide you're going to go for it on fourth and one. That really turned the game. Hugh Freeze has a tendency to do some of those things. He makes it aggressive. And then really, guys, I mean, from that point on, I mean, Memphis just laid the woodshed down on them, man. I mean, it just took them out back and just beat them down. You know, I think we have seen that Tony Connor, who is their kind of all-everything secondary slash linebacker, that's one of those five stars, the only kid from Mississippi, on the, in that 2013 class. He goes down 2 weeks ago, going to be out for 4 weeks, and you've seen what the defense has looked like the last 2 weeks. And so, you know, it's got to be frustrating from their end, just not the physical defense. And Memphis, you know, really took charge of that game. That was really kind of a shocking deal to me. I mean, especially being up as much as they were, you know, from that standpoint. And I don't know, I heard a guy talk today, you know, that, you know, Ole Miss, and he used Texas A&M as another example, that they're very good at getting all in on a game, and not very good at getting all in on a season. And they're still kind of immature in that, you know, they put all their eggs in the basket to beat, all, you know, Alabama and really played well. And I think everybody that left that game that night said, you know, if you looked at it objectively, Alabama turned the ball over five times. But when you looked at the game, you felt like Ole Miss was the better team from a standpoint of they had some things that go their way, but they just looked like a really good team. And so from then on, it's been kind of a letdown. So, yeah, really intriguing game coming up this week. But, you know, very interesting how that game played out. I don't know your thoughts on that. But, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough game, but I thought Ole Miss would take care of them because Memphis hasn't stopped anybody all year. I just felt like their offense would, you know, put 40 points on them and it would be more of a shootout. And they really dominated the game.
Well, when it – I think you kind of described it pretty poignant. I looked at the game, all of a sudden it's 14-0. It was 14-0 pretty quick. And I'm going, I wasn't expecting Ole Miss to be able to come out and throw up 14 real quick and Memphis not have an answer. And then all of a sudden the tide had changed. Momentum switched to Memphis's way. And like you said, they kind of put the throttle down. And Ole Miss was never able to counterpunch after that. And that's where it could be partly because the defense is where they are with injuries right now. But to me, it didn't seem like they were that aggressiveness, that they have, you know, that mentality where we can still win this ball game. It was almost a defeated mentality that you saw out of Ole Miss on the field late in that ball game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being at the Alabama-Ole Miss game, that was a completely different team. I know that, you know, the defense is riddled with injury. Losing Kim Dichi is tough, you know, in a game like that when you're going to have to kind of will your way to stop Memphis. But, I mean, if I were to tell you guys that Memphis was going to put up 500 yards, 491 yards against Ole Miss at the beginning of the year, we knew that Paxton Lynch was good. You know, he's getting some talk for the NFL even before this game. But then you look at it, and Blair, I think you hit on the glaring point is, I mean, Ole Miss cannot run the ball. They had 480 yards. They were outgained by Memphis, but still not by much. Only had two turnovers as opposed to Memphis's one, so it's not like it was, you know, a huge turnover differential. But they only had 40 yards of rushing. I mean, yeah. I don't care who you're playing. I mean, especially Memphis. Memphis is a good team this year, but just about any SEC school should be able to run the ball on Memphis. And that's what's going to kill them. I mean, they weren't forced to pick up short yardage against Alabama, and maybe that masked possibly their, you know, greatest weakness. And, you know, during the Hugh Freeze era, they've had these scat backs, Jalen Walton. You look at Scott a couple years ago, and they're great for his system, but when it comes to picking up short yardage, they just can't do it. And, you know, they're going to run into some trouble in the SEC, and the sad thing, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, you're sitting pretty at the top of the SEC, and I mean, you still have a shot, but losing that Florida game is tough. And now Memphis, I mean, this takes you out of any national contention at all.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, guys, is they still got to play Texas A&M. They still got to play LSU. They still got to play Auburn. You know, and that's at Auburn, you know, after what kind of happened last year. So,
and they still got to play Mississippi State.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's in Starkville. But, I mean, those are, you know, they're still – you know, there's still some games on the schedule, you know, that they got to get defensively. You know, Hugh Freeze said at his Monday press conference that they missed 30 tackles, they counted on film. 30 tackles, guys. So, you know, that's a very poor performance, and they got to get that thing righted right quick. And so it'd be interesting to see how that works out.
Well, another offensive performance that was completely different than this game was Georgia-Missouri.
Yeah.
We didn't even have a touchdown in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even – yeah, I saw that, and I was like, you're talking about 9-6. I mean, who would have thought that, guys? I mean, as bad as Missouri's playing, that – you know. I mean, how does Georgia, even without Chubb, I mean, Sony Michel, what's the other kid that they got? I mean, they still got two running backs that would start on 8 of the SEC teams.
Marshall, right Keith now. Marshall.
Marshall, yeah. They came back from injury. So, yeah, man, that's just, boy, really, really, really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, Shane, we had this conversation, what, 2 weeks ago or whenever it was, and you were, you know, I was kind of stressing that it depended on how Georgia, I mean, obviously losing Nick Chubb, we didn't see that coming, but it depended on, you know, how Georgia responded. And, you were still saying that, and it was a very good point that, you know, this is an SEC West loss against Alabama. Sure, it was demoralizing. Sure, it was awful to lose on your home field after Alabama was coming off, you know, kind of a mediocre performance against Ole Miss. But this was the flip side of that. I mean, they didn't lose this game, but I mean, is there any confidence in Mark Richt in Georgia right now? I mean, but in this is the thing to me is you take away Nick Chubb, which is awful. You know, you feel horrible for him. Second time, just like losing Gurley last year, whenever that was, 2 years ago. I guess it was last year. But the thing to me is they have no passing attack. I knew that Lambert wasn't a guy that's going to kill you downfield, but you really just thought, kind of like Alabama in the past, if you could just have a guy that could manage the game, he's a seasoned guy, played okay at Virginia. Well, obviously, he won the starting job. If he could just control the game, and you've got guys like Mitchell on the outside.
And the smoke and mirrors that they provided the first couple games, because was it the second game that he had the most completions in a row of any Georgia quarterback?
Yeah.
No, anybody in the SEC.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, it was like 24 straight passes. He broke like an SEC record.
And I don't care who you're playing, whether it's an FCS or a Power 5 or a top five conference team, still to hit 24 in a row, it's not just on you. I mean, you as a quarterback have to be
7-on-7 is difficult.
Yeah, and so, you know, we thought that wasn't going to be a problem, or at least I did. Fool me once, but I mean, I'm sitting there seeing that kind of performance coming from him. It's like, all right, maybe Richt does have him a quarterback after all.
And then, you know what else, guys? I mean, just like we talked about Ole Miss, you know, they put everything into that Alabama game. I mean, they put their whole season in that thing, and they had to flip the quarterback 3 times in that game. It was a complete disaster to where all of a sudden they left that game going, who are we? Then you go and say, okay, I got to right this ship and let me go to Tennessee. Tennessee's reeling. You know, we can put pressure on them early. First play of the game, Chubb gets hurt. And they don't really – it doesn't faze them. They go up 24-3. And then to have the collapse that they had at the end of the first half against Tennessee, and then end up not being able to pull that game out, I think really, you know, has really shaken those types of things. And that's, you know, it's just interesting how things can change that quickly.
And I'm so glad I waited on a tweet, because if you listen to this podcast, you know I have a dislike for UT. And I had this tweet all ready to go, and it's like good news, Tennessee fans. You've come down from a 14-point deficit
or you've given up a 14-point deficit again. And I was talking about how they gave that pick six in the end zone. Yeah. They went from scoring seven to giving seven. So that in essence is a 14-point swing. And I did not send that for one, whatever reason. And late in the second half, they start doing that. It's like, oh, thank God I didn't send that.
Yeah, I mean that game set football back a while. So let's don't talk about that game anymore.
All right, we don't have to talk about that game anymore. Trust me, because they've got a bye week this week, so we don't have to talk about Tennessee's performance. It's like perfect. Is LSU the real deal?
If Brandon Harris plays like he did against Florida, yes.
Nick?
That's the best we've seen him, which is scary if you're, an LSU fan. But if he can play like that, that is something. I firmly believe that if he plays his average game like he has in the past, that they're going to beat almost everybody. But anybody like Alabama that has a good defense that can stop the run, which is Alabama's bread and butter, then I don't care who you are, If you don't have a passing attack, Georgia kind of showed that. Nick Chubb even broke an 80-yard run against Alabama, and it was late. But, he put up 140-something yards or whatever it was, and, it wasn't even a game hardly. And I know the conditions, kind of dictated that.
Yeah, but that's one thing.
You're not going to beat Alabama with Fournette. I don't care how good he is. I mean, running back is a very impactful position, but you got to mix it up every once in a while. So,
I will tell you, though, that Florida does have a legitimate run defense.
Oh, they do. Yeah, I know they do. And that's where Brandon Harris came in, because they pretty much had to have him to win the game and a couple of trick plays. But
Fournette had a pretty good game overall.
Yeah.
He had 180, 190. I don't have the box score pulled up right now. But, he didn't get his 200-plus yards, but he was right there on the door again.
Yeah.
How great is it to have Miles back? Tie ball game, fourth quarter. Yeah. Let's just throw a little fake field goal, man. A little toss out to the guy. It's just like, did y'all see the kid bobble it for like 4 yards? I didn't catch that live, and then I saw the replay, and I'm like, oh my God, that guy literally almost dropped that football, which would have been incomplete, not a fumble. But it was unbelievable. So just you just gotta love Miles to be able to call a play like that. At that time in the game and be able to kind of put it away. And I tell you what, you got to give Florida a lot of credit. They played a lot better offensively than I thought that they could play. I do think that's what I'm really interested about, seeing the buildup for the LSU to Alabama game, because I think there's a number of things that both of those teams can do well. And I think there's holes in both of them. LSU defensively, I was shocked that they gave up 28 points to Florida, but I also think that they didn't really know what to expect from Treon Harris. Treon Harris, however you say his name. So they had to kind of get their feet a little bit, kind of under them with regards to that. But I thought Florida played a really good game, from that standpoint. But I would have never thought after watching Mississippi State and LSU play that LSU actually would have played that giving up 160 yards to Fournette was really one of the better defensive performances against him, because he's running over everybody. It's unbelievable, what he's doing, what Henry's doing. But a really good game. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I watched that game from beginning to end. And I think Brandon Harris, if he plays the way he's playing, he's very confident right now. I think LSU's done a really good job of kind of allowing that to kind of organically. They didn't have to use him against Mississippi State. They didn't have to use him against some of the other teams. They were able to get wins without having to put a lot of pressure on him. And now, because you've got these – Geis or whatever his name is, and Fournette. You got these guys that, are just dominating, and then he can kind of roll off of that. So he played a heck of a game.
Well, and what LSU now has is you can put the moniker on him that you put on an Alabama quarterback, is that you have the ability to have a game manager, somebody that can come in and do some of the things you need from a quarterback, and to relieve the pressure off of your running back, Fournette, so that they can't put eight in the box and expect to run every time.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of a sudden you've opened up that field, and you have to respect that there's at least the opportunity for him to throw the ball. And LSU's still got some talented wide receivers out there on the edges.
Oh, yeah.
And so because of that, now all of a sudden it's not just a one-dimensional offense that you have to worry about with LSU. And that completely changes things with them.
Yeah, and the other thing that changes them is their defense. You know, going into the year, I thought the disruption in defensive coordinator was going to be a bigger issue than it has been. And they've actually exceeded that. They've had the players that they needed. The Neal guy is just a complete effort guy that's just destroying backfields. You know, it's just – I was totally shocked. I thought the Kevin Steele and that whole defensive coordinator position, I thought was a downgrade. And obviously I was wrong. They've really outperformed that and have had a solid defense. Now they get Jalen Mills back. So he's going to get worked in here over the next couple of weeks and probably feel a little bit comfortable. So secondary ought to be, you know, get a little bit of help from that standpoint. So it's pretty interesting.
That brings up an interesting point. Would you think that Chavis is doing a better job right now than Muschamp? If we're talking about these coordinators that – or these defensive-minded guys that are
well,
now
I think I mean Auburn doesn't have anybody like the two defensive ends of Texas A&M guy. I can tell you right now, guys. I mean, Alabama has offensive linemen that can help them. I mean, Mississippi State couldn't stop them. I mean, they literally had two tackles. I mean, Dak Prescott was running for his life, and that helps. I mean, I think Texas A&M's better. But you know, they're still suspect in the secondary and in linebackers. I mean, linebackers was killing Texas A&M. Auburn just doesn't have talent on the defensive side of the ball that's actually producing. They just haven't played up to what they're supposed to be playing up to. And Muschamp has really kind of beat the mantra of kind of building towards the recruiting trail. And you come in here and kind of set that mindset that, you know, everybody's job's up for, it's got an opportunity to come in and play.
How much weight can you give to Muschamp's recruiting efforts? When did you see the video or the viral video from the Kentucky game? Did you get to see that video where basically Muschamp went up to Juice Johnson after the game and said, "Man, I made a mistake. I should have given you a look," because he's out of like Winter Park, Florida, and Muschamp never even looked at him. And so how much weight can you give him on the recruiting side?
Well, I think from a defensive coordinator standpoint, it's a totally different ballgame.
He just doesn't know how people catch balls.
I mean, it's a different deal, man, when you're the head coach, and it didn't work well with him. It's not to say that if he gets another opportunity, it can work, but I mean, he's proven himself as a defensive coordinator. And at Auburn, you can go get players. So I expect that to actually change. But I don't think he's got a lot to work with. And I think that's what everybody thought. Everybody thought with him and his track record that they were going to elevate, that the defense couldn't get worse than it was last year. It was pathetic last year. They couldn't get it worse. And then everybody thought that they were going to get a lot more production out of the quarterback position, and that was two really bad projections. And now we are where we are.
Well, as we look to this week's slate of ball games, Alabama comes off of their, I call it an impressive win, the way they played against A&M, hosting the Tennessee Volunteers, who's coming off of a bye week this week, and the elation that they have to, you know, get that win in the SEC against Georgia a couple weeks ago. We already talked about that. Does Tennessee realistically have a shot here?
Yeah, I believe they got a shot. Do I think that they're going to win? Do I think they're a 15-point underdog? I don't. I think it's going to be, you know, more of a 7-10 ball game. That's just me personally. But because I think Tennessee really, I think that was a big thing that happened to them in Georgia. I think it moved over to their bye week. I think they've got young kids that are fighting through juniors and seniors that have been beat up for 4 years that are really not SEC players and kind of losers, to be honest with you. And their freshmen and sophomores of Tennessee are trying to kind of put the program on their back and kind of will it.
I think that win,
and they finally figured it out.
That win will completely change their season.
Yeah,
as we look forward, because I think that if they were to have lost that Georgia game, they might not win two more games in the SEC. I mean,
yeah, they were looking at the first 8-loss season ever in, you know, Tennessee history or whatever it is. But, yeah, I think it's going to be competitive. I think, you know, I think Bama, you know, coming off that big game, I think, you know, that's the thing with it, man. In the SEC, you get a big-time win, next week's even bigger. So it's just kind of those building steps. And but, you know, I don't think Tennessee can stop the run game of Alabama enough to give it anything. And I think they can give it into Dobbs' hands. But I tell you what, you know, there's one thing that can happen, and it could be this. They could look at the kid at Texas A&M and go, that's a really good quarterback, and he threw three freaking picks, all right, that you know, went back for touchdowns.
Two of them
we
the
may
same
not
guy.
Get Dobbs. Yeah. So that may scare them and giving Dobbs the opportunity to throw the ball. I think you got to let Dobbs do what he does. But yeah, I see it more of a 28-17 ball game or something. You know, more of that line than a 35-20 or anything like that. But I could be wrong,
Nick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a rivalry game, obviously, and I think Tennessee is.
So you guys still consider it a rivalry game. I'm glad to hear that.
It's always a rivalry game. Come on, Shane.
Because Tennessee fans, I mean, this is their rivalry game, but I think it's pretty one-sided right now.
You know, as a true informed Alabama would always say that we're required to hate Auburn because they're in the state, but we choose to hate Tennessee. So that's how that rivalry goes. But, you know, it's a big game. I think Alabama, and Saban said this, you know, he's really trying to zone in with the guys, especially some of the secondary guys in the defense, that they really need to understand that they control everything that they do. And it seemed, I don't know if that's just something he's irking this year, but it's like that Alabama played with, and he said this before against Ole Miss, that they had the intensity, but they focused it the wrong way. And the weird thing is Alabama's played much better on the road this year than they have at home, which is crazy to think. But I think that, you know, Coker's kind of come along to where, obviously, he probably, if we had to get him to win a game for us, I don't think that would be pretty. But with Derrick Henry running the way that he does, you know, unless Tennessee's defense is much better than I expect, Alabama should be able to score. And granted, that game would be totally different if three of those pick sixes didn't go, you know, for touchdowns. But and some of them were really bad passes. But I think Alabama has very much improved rushing on third down and through the front seven. We knew that they were good last year. We know they're really good this year. But I think with the addition of Mel Tucker, coaching the secondary, Minka Fitzpatrick, a freshman, obviously has really come, you know, into his own. But I think that the defense is that much better, and I can't see Josh Dobbs. He gave us trouble 2 years ago when he came in. I think he scored at least one or two touchdowns after the starter got hurt. I don't even remember who it was now. But, you know, I think Alabama's defense is going to win games like this. And the offense isn't where it needs to be other than Derrick Henry, but I just think the defense is that good. I mean, not to overreact to three pick sixes, but last year, this is so frustrating to me, and I know people laugh for, you know, being frustrated as an Alabama fan, but if Alabama would have had a defense last year, it would have been a great team. You know, it was a good team. It was a really good team. I think they outperformed. We talked about that all year, what they really were, but over, you know, you can't give up 45 points. That's not Alabama football and expect to win the Iron Bowl. I mean, they did, but that's not Alabama football. So it's really encouraging as a fan to see that Alabama's defense seems to be back, and that's the strength of the team, because every year that Alabama's won a national championship, I mean, they've had some great offensive players, but, you know, look at it. Last year was an incredible offensive year, and you see where it got us with a not a mediocre defense, but a less than stellar defense.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they go out and win this game 35-10, watch out, because they've hit their groove, and because I think Tennessee is going to be ready because they've got a week off, they got fresh, they feel good about themselves, they feel confident, they feel like they've gotten over this big hill. I think going on the road, I think they're going to put a lot into this. And so I think they're going to be ready for the challenge. But if Alabama takes their hit and then just smokes them, God, I don't want to play them in a month. I mean, that's just because I think they're pretty close to peaking, you know, their stride. And if they get there, man, good gravy. It's going to be interesting for sure.
Misery loves company. And so as a Kentucky fan and someone who just likes Tennessee, I really hope it's more like the 35-10.
Because, me too.
Because the hope, these Tennessee fans have hope. And I don't want to see that from that program because they are making strides to get better. And I don't want them there yet. So, I mean, if you can just, you know, be that Lucy and yank that football out from under Charlie Brown one more time for me, Alabama, I'd appreciate it.
And, you know, guys, let me add this really quick. A lot of people, if you're not an Alabama fan, won't care about this because it's pretty inside baseball. But one of the things for me to look forward to in this game is a guy, you know, Alabama's had issues with Kenyon Drake. I mean, he's a scat back. I mean, he's just a smaller guy. He's proven he can't run between the tackles, and I've really thought that he's been underutilized. But with Kiffin kind of dialing back the system, it's been very different, and his role has diminished. But one of the things to watch this game, and I don't know if it'll happen, but Bo Scarborough was a guy that, you know, looks – a lot of people will say that he's more imposing than Derrick Henry, which is tough to believe. He's shorter than Derrick Henry, but he weighs about, 250, which is crazy. But he's coming back from a knee injury and a four-game suspension. This is kind of the first game that a lot of people think that he could see real playing time in, and that depends on, you know, the score and everything. But Alabama's going to have a second back against LSU. I don't care what you say. Derrick Henry got 32 touches, 236 yards last week, and he's been a 20 to 30 touch guy this whole year, but that's not Alabama's system, and it may be different, and that may be what they have to do, but not to say that I'm, you don't want to say that you're worried about anybody getting injured, but Alabama doesn't have a second back right now that they can reliably use. I mean, Kenyon Drake is a great situational back, but so if I'm really interested in just to watch, you know, especially if it is, I'm not saying it will be, but if it's a 35-10 game and you're stuck watching this game, I think it's a CBS game, you know, just watch and see if Alabama can develop yet another 1-2 punch. And I think that if they do, LSU could have some real issues because Derrick Henry doesn't have conditioning issues, but 32 to 35 touches against LSU, against that physical of a defense, that changes the equation. But if you've got another guy you can plug in, that could be a big deal.
All right, so that's probably the biggest game. After that, I mean, really you're looking at Texas A&M at Ole Miss. You know, two teams.
Very, very intriguing game.
Yeah, two teams that just, for the most part, got embarrassed in certain ways. I mean, A&M, like we've already talked about, three picks last week. Ole Miss losing to Memphis. You know, which one's going to come back and shake that off and come out to play? It's going to be an interesting – that's an interesting matchup and an interesting game at an interesting time.
Yeah, and I'm really shocked that Ole Miss is the favorite in this game, you know, after watching them the last couple of weeks. But, you know, it's A&M. But A&M, this is what they've got to get over. It's, you know, you start out undefeated, you play Alabama, and now you're not physical enough. Texas A&M's got to take the next step. It helps that they actually played the first 2 years because of the odd way the schedule worked out, that they had to go to Oxford twice when they entered the league. And then Ole Miss went to them last year. So they've already been there twice. So it's not an unfamiliar place to them. But I'm really interested to see how both these teams bounce back. And you know, I couldn't pick this game either way. I was actually just shocked that Ole Miss was, you know, was favored, I mean, almost a touchdown at the opening odds. And so, you know, I think the defensive ends are going to give Ole Miss problems. They've got injuries on the offensive line. They do get Laramie Tunsil back. But, I mean, it's his first game back. You know, he hadn't played in 7 games this year, and he's going to have to actually, you know, deal with Garrett. I mean, and if you see that guy, I mean, if you watch that guy play, I mean, it's unbelievable what he can do. And so it's just really – this is probably the game to me that intrigues me the most, because I want to see how these two teams, you know, really turn, because I think a loss on either side of this thing could really, you know, kind of knock that team back and really kind of make the remainder of the season, you know, an uphill battle for them to kind of, you know, maintain that edge of getting to those, you know, 8, 9, 10 wins that they thought were going to be there.
And to me, the really intriguing part of this is, you know, neither of these teams have played LSU yet. So this, like you said, this could be a really statement game for either one of these teams, because Texas A&M's coming off a loss to Alabama. Both of them coming off losses, you know, you could argue that Ole Miss's was more disappointing. But like you said, I mean, if either one of these teams want to get to 9 or 10 wins, they've got to win this game, because you look at Ole Miss already losing 2 games. Granted, one of them was to, you know, to Florida in the East. But I think this could be playing, you know, let's just say LSU, Alabama slips up and LSU beats them, and I think that's going to be a close game. This game right here could be for second place in the West, and I know that's, you know, not entertaining to most people, but, you know, if you're an Ole Miss fan or a Texas A&M fan, that could be something to hang your hat on, especially if you're Ole Miss because you beat Alabama. So with LSU both, you know, still remaining on both team schedules, it's a very intriguing game. I'm with you guys. I think this is the most intriguing game to me, because I think it could go either way, and the response is something that, you know, could change the season for either team.
Well, I mean, if Ole Miss were, I don't think this is going to happen, but I mean, if they win out, you know, all of a sudden, what do you have looking at in the SEC championship game? I mean, we already know the East. We've already talked about how much in shambles that place is.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at Ole Miss, if they win out, you know, possibly could be the SEC West representative. I don't want to go there and speculate on that, because I don't think that's plausible at this point, especially after their performance against Memphis. But, you know, realistically, the SEC at that situation might be on the outside looking in to the 4-team playoff if that were to have happened. But I don't think that will. This one, I wouldn't know how to call what team's going to win, but I'm interested to see how each team performs, how they come back and bounce back and set up to play this game, because it's an important game for both of these programs in the rest of their season. Other games that you guys have said, I know for us, Blair, there's UK Mississippi State, but any other games? I mean, Vanderbilt Missouri is somewhat intriguing in that, you know, Missouri's not near as good as we were thinking they might be. Vanderbilt has a realistic shot to be competitive with them. I mean, they couldn't beat South Carolina last week, who was winless in the SEC prior to that game. So, you know, who knows what's gonna occur there at Vanderbilt. Both of them have pretty decent defenses. That should be an interesting game of two mediocre teams in the SEC, at least. So you've got a balanced matchup, I guess, that way. And then I think I'd like to say that the Auburn-Arkansas game would be a good matchup, but I think Arkansas is going to get back to what they do best and running that ball, and they're just going to run all over Auburn's defense. And I don't think it's going to be even close.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Auburn having to go to Arkansas, I think Arkansas is going to be ready to play. I think they're actually going to pound that. I do think the Missouri Vanderbilt game, I mean, have y'all seen the over-under for this? I mean, it's like 34 or 35. I don't think I've ever seen an over-under. I mean, how crazy is that? And so, I mean, it's phenomenal. Like, I think Houston and somebody else, Houston plays somebody, and the over-under is like 71.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's just, that just is comical to me. But, yeah, that's definitely a game I'm not going to watch. I mean, it's just crazy how inefficient those two teams are. So that ought to be interesting, especially watching what Georgia had to go up there and kind of deal with. So
then the old Hilltoppers get to go to Baton Rouge for a night game, get to go visit Death Valley at night.
Yeah, good luck.
I think they'll be able to, it's not going to be close, but I think they can put up some points. I mean,
I think if he can get hot, he can for a little bit kind of match and kind of keep up. But man, Fournette's going to run all over them. Their
defense is not.
I mean, it's not even going to be fair.
But if Florida,
I love Western, but.
But if Florida can put up 28, I think Western could put up every bit of 28. The difference, though, is LSU could put up 45 without batting an eye.
Yeah.
On Western's defense, so that's going to be the difference. But I think, I don't know what the over under is on that one, but that one's going to probably be kind of up there, I would think. All right, tell me what you think about the Dogs and the Cats.
Well, it's a blackout, Shane. So if you know anything about Mississippi State fans,
I love gimmicks. I mean, thank you.
Even when they were number one last year, they had something to complain about. So it's already an underlying issue that they hate black uniforms, and they threw a fit when we did it. I think we did it like Mullen's second year, and I think we surprised the team. It was one of those deals where they went back in from warm-ups and played Alabama and came out with these black unis and got just drubbed, and everybody says because of the black unis.
Had nothing to do with being Alabama.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, Shane, I mean, Mullen is 6-0 against Kentucky, which is pretty interesting because if you follow Kentucky and Mississippi State and this rivalry that's kind of been over the last, 12 years or so, there was that span there for about 5 or 6 years where we traded wins. You know, we always won on each other's home field, and it really determined if Kentucky was going to go to a bowl game. It really determined if Mississippi State was going to have a good year, go to a bowl game.
Ah, the good old Rich Brook era.
Yeah, but as you see now, I mean, Mullen's, State is 21-4 at home in their last 25 games. The four losses are to teams in the top 16. So it's going to be tough to play there. I think State has got some groove being able to play these non-conference games. Dak Prescott is playing better than he was last year by a mile. He's not running the football. They're not really running the football, obviously, as well as they were last year. But if you take a look at what Mississippi State did last year, I mean, they put up, the fourth best total offense ever in the history of the SEC. And Dak Prescott had, the third best, better – he had a better year than even Tebow did. The only person that had better years was Manziel. He joined the 50-30 club last week, so 15 passing touchdowns and 30 rushing in a career, which, Johnny Manziel and Tebow are the only ones that have ever done that. So, and he hadn't thrown an interception. He could pretty much go into Andre Woodson territory after this game if he doesn't throw a pick. And set the SEC record here in the next 2 weeks if he doesn't throw a pick. But
you just jinxed him. You know that, right?
Yeah, I mean, but everybody's talking about it. But I think with Dak,
that's just like when you're watching golf and they go, he sunk X number of shots from 20 feet out.
Yeah,
and of course he's going to miss this one.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm fine with that because it's funny because Dak is going to see everything you throw at him. He's seen it. He is so calm. He's a much better passer. He's passing at 67%. completion to 60 last year. Through seven games last year, he had 1,694 passing yards, 11 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions this year. And then this year he's got 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and he's at 1,700 yards. So, and he hadn't played a game and a half, pretty much a game time. Been really impressed with what he's done. And he's kind of had to wheel this thing together. So be interested to see. I mean, Kentucky's had a little bit of extra time, from the Thursday game. I think this is one that they have to have scheduled to say, hey, we got to go compete with a Mississippi State. This is a game that if we expect to go to a bowl game, we got to go down there and figure out a way to win. So it should be a good game. It's 11.5 point spread, which I was really shocked by. That's a touchdown and a field goal difference. I mean, that's over that. So I think it's going to be a close game. It was a close game last year. That's just the way it is. State doesn't have the running game. But did you see that stat that I sent you, by the way, on Twitter? I don't know if y'all saw this, but it kind of shocked me being a State fan. The number of freshmen, which was true freshmen or redshirt freshmen that played this year in the SEC, Georgia has 24, Mississippi State has 23. They played the second most true freshmen. If you look at their depth chart, guys, this is what and Shane, when we talk about this with Stoops, he's in his third year. It's all about building depth. It's being able to figure out a way to get through that fourth and fifth year to where you can balance the program, to where you can actually, kind of build it. And what Mullen has done in their two deep, it's basically 70% junior and seniors, but he's got 24 kids that are freshmen and true freshmen. I mean, that are redshirt freshmen and true freshmen that are actually playing, whether that's special teams, whether that's getting in, in offense or defense, they're getting on the field and getting experience and getting into the program. And he's got that thing balanced. I think it's pretty impressive what he's actually done. And this is really, we were picked last in the SEC West, so go figure. Next year, guess what? We'll lose Dak Prescott, bring back 18 starters on offense and defense, and we'll be picked last because we lost Dak Prescott. So it's just kind of the way it is. But it's an intriguing game because there's a lot of crap going on, and the black uniforms kind of throw me for a loop. But who knows, Shane? I don't know what you think. I mean, I think Kentucky's got some weapons, and they can get the ball down the field, and sometimes if State doesn't really State has a tendency not to start well. I mean, obviously last week against Louisiana Tech, they were down 14-0. So, they have a tendency to do that where they have to dig themselves out. So that could be a problem.
I would like this game better if it was at Commonwealth. I don't see Kentucky going into Mississippi State and pulling out the victory. I mean, you look at them, Kentucky's sitting at 4-2. They have to find the way they've played this year, two more wins. And they're on the schedule. I mean, they've got the Charlotte 49ers, the next to last week in the season. So they've got to find one more game, because I don't know if they can win that out-of-conference game against Louisville. That's going to be a tough one for Kentucky to come away with. So they're going to have to win Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, or Vanderbilt. I like my chances of getting Vanderbilt over the other ones. And I didn't see them being a bowl team at the beginning of this season. So, I'm happy with where they are. It's just, where I talked about earlier, the disappointment of where they realistically could be by the way they've played on the field so far. It's just disheartening as a UK fan. But when you put it in perspective, I was thinking 4, maybe 5 wins on their schedule at the beginning of the season. So for them to realistically have a shot at 6 or 7 wins here, I couldn't ask for any more as a Kentucky fan. But I don't think tonight is, or this Saturday is, where they're going to get that win.
I know that Charlotte's, they're no Eastern Kentucky, dude. Sorry.
That's all right. Hey, there again, you got to win some of those crazy ones, right?
And that's exactly it, dude.
At the end of the season, that's still a W. As bad as that performance was at times against Eastern Kentucky, you know, they didn't give up. They could have, you know, it showed a lot about their about the team for them to be down and come back to go into overtime to win that game. It says a lot because they had no business winning that game the way they played. So that's all.
It always scares me because, I mean, Mullen's 6-0. At some point, they're going to lose that game. And, you know, I think State's a better team. I think defensively, they can get after you. You know, they're figuring that piece of it out with Manny Diaz. I think last week went a long way in doing that once they kind of had to dig themselves out of it. And I think the offense is figuring it out. They finally got some young freshman running backs that they've actually handed the ball off to, and they're kind of spreading that around. But, you know, it's pretty exciting, but we'll see, man.
You can get yourself.
I like Dak Prescott. That's my biggest thing is that he's unreal.
Hey, get you guys selves out of the cellar of the West with a win here. Prove all the media types wrong that had Mississippi State being in the bottom. You might be there today, but you don't have to stay there.
I mean, this is a crucial game, man. If State wins this game, they got Missouri on the road on a Thursday night. That's now a winnable game. I thought before the year that was going to be too tough of a game. You know, they got a shot to go in there and win. I mean, Missouri's not lighting everything up. It's still going to be very difficult to play there on a Thursday night. You got Alabama at home, you got Ole Miss at home, and you got Arkansas on the road. So you've got an opportunity to be, you know, at least 8-4, opportunity to be 9-3, guys. And, you know, if you look at last year and you go, hey, they were number one, and, you know, what they did last year, they ended up 9-3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really thought that this was the year that it was going to dip to that 7-win, you know, 8 wins being kind of a cap. But I think they do have an opportunity to get that. And I tell you what, man, that after that LSU-Alabama game and coming into Starkville the next week, that's going to be the game that's – if they can get by LSU, that's going to be the hardest game Alabama deals with.
Yep, and it normally is because we do not play well at Starkville at all. So
and you're so beat up because you have to put so much in the field against LSU every year.
Yeah, does LSU have a week off as well before that?
Yeah, I think they do.
I think both of y'all actually have a week off to lead up to it. Yeah, good stuff, man.
All right, well, this is how we're doing things. We want to thank everyone for listening in. I want to thank my co-hosts tonight, Blair Smiley and Nick Jones. We appreciate you guys being on here for another podcast. We will continue our podcast. We'll look for another one real soon, probably about a week if all goes well. And with that, we will call this podcast done.